Welcome to the Stories for Mormons podcast. My name is Jonathan Kingsley, and I'll be your host. Welcome again. This is the commentary episode on The Blessing. I will play that story again so it is fresh in our minds before hearing the commentary. Before I do, I would like to extend an invitation to the listeners who might know someone who might have experienced emotional and spiritual trauma from the recent Sunday afternoon conference talk by Russell M. Nelson to revisit or share episode 3, The Prodigal God, with them. Any discussion of an afterlife where someone is forced to ask, "Where is my family?" only goes to further illustrate the divided nature that is taught by the LDS Church of what is believed the afterlife will be like. In my opinion, love is always enough. So if you have friends or family that might benefit from the story, please share it with them. No one should have to question the enduring nature of relationships that have been founded in love. Heaven is truly only heaven when we are united and connected. I will have the link to The Prodigal God in the show notes to make it easier to be shared. Again, I would like to thank those that shared their commentary for this episode, The Blessing. I hope that you will continue to share your thoughts, that we might be able to explore the variety of understandings we all have when hearing a story. Now let's listen to The Blessing one more time, and then on to the commentary. The community of a small town had gathered together to worship early one morning. The people were heard murmuring about a boy in the community who would fall to the ground and foam at the mouth. Many were whispering it was the sins of the father that brought this great evil upon the son. Some even told the father how God must be punishing him through the boy's afflictions for his sins. Others tried to offer sympathy by telling the father it wasn't because of his sins, but rather God's will. The father was constantly seeking blessings of healing from the elders and priests, but none were successful. Jesus then entered into the crowd, with his disciples asking what the commotion was all about. At the moment Jesus laid eyes on the child, straightaway the boy fell to the floor, writhing and foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the father, "How long has this been going on?" The father replied, "Since he was a young child. He often casts himself into the fire or the water to be destroyed. If you are able to do anything for him, please, sir, have pity on us and help us." Jesus, discerning the man's thoughts and worries about how he is perceived to be less than by those in the crowd, was moved with compassion. Jesus asked him, "What do you believe?" The man responded, "That it is God's will my son is afflicted because of my sins." Jesus said, "I will bless your son through you. If you are able, all things can be done for the one who believes." Immediately the father of the child cried out, "I believe, help my unbelief." Jesus looked around at the crowd, then proceeded to bless the man quietly that only his disciples could hear. He said, "Let not your beliefs get in the way of the love you have for your child." The father then picked up his son, who had finally calmed down, and regarded him carefully. It was as if he was really seeing him for the first time. He realized Jesus had blessed him with doubts and disbelief. With tears in his eyes, the feelings brought on by the beliefs of his community, which beliefs he was holding on to so strongly, were born from him. He immediately said to his child, "I no longer believe what the masses whisper about me or you. I no longer believe in a God that is punishing me. I no longer believe that you are in need of healing." The father then declared solemnly to his son, "You are already perfect, and I love you exactly as you are." Jesus then turned to his disciples and said, "Blessed are those who doubt and disbelieve, for they shall be able to see clearly, and shall be prepared to hear my message." The disciples went away contemplating what they had seen and heard. Okay, now on to the first comment, which states, "A little while back, my ex-Mormon mother sent me a text saying, 'A closed mind has more answers than questions, and an open mind has more questions than answers.' I was so proud of her. I asked her what she would rather have, answers or questions. She said questions, but she admitted that this was a recent development. Answers calm the mind. Questions have one of two effects. They can either trigger our curiosity or give us anxiety. I think most people would say that questions give them anxiety. I think it's natural. It pushes us to find an answer. But with some things, like say, politics, economics, religion, or astrophysics, we are so incredibly limited in our ability to understand them fully, which is why people either cling to a belief tighter than matter clings to a black hole, or say it's too confusing and move on to just enjoying life without complexity. I love the conclusion of this parable. If Christ is real, I don't think he would want us to blindly follow him. That sounds like something an emotional manipulator would want." Here is the second comment. "I feel that doubts and disbelief very often take place in one's quest for truth and subsequently have a place in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Questions, inquiry, and analysis are part of being seekers of truth. I'm not sure I feel that Jesus Christ was doubting the culture and approach of living the law of Moses in the same way you and I might doubt gospel truths or elements of testimony. I believe because of his relationship with Heavenly Father, his understanding of who he was, and his purpose in his Father's plan, that he knew differently and could see and discern truth from error. Rather than doubting the culture and traditions, he simply knew better. With that said, I believe his repeated message was to doubt not but be believing. Fear not, but look to him. He knew that we would face doubt and disbelief, and so provides truth that we can come to know through study, application, and patience. I think it is very important to compare our questions and doubts in the light of the truth we have gained. I'm grateful that he allows me to seek and search for myself, and that I can have moments to reflect on what I really believe and have experienced as I follow him in faith." For me, in the setup of the story, we have a community that provides answers to the Father for the malady that has beset his son. We all want answers. And many in the LDS Church believe that they have the answers, and as any good missionary, want to give those answers to whomever may need them. This is usually done with good intent, though it is not always received the way it was intended. Sometimes answers based in beliefs only provide guilt and shame to the receiver. In the case of the Father, in this story, the community tells him that it is because of his sins, or it is a punishment for the same, as to why his child is suffering. A more tactful community member offers the idea that it is God's will. Let's explore the idea of answers, which LDS members refer to as truth. What aspect of truth do we really only have access to? I would say that we really only have access to this moment right now, followed by the next moment. So truth can only be experienced in the now, in each moment. Now, many want to moralize truth, but I see morality and truth as two separate things. If a person decides to drink alcohol, then in the moment, he or she is drinking alcohol. The reality or truth is amoral. We as humans then assign a morality to this behavior as being good or bad. Some behaviors have a tendency to promote human flourishing, and some diminish human experience, but it depends on the situation. So the truth is what is, and is amoral. Morality is a belief about that which is. In my mind, morality cannot be truth because it is a belief and not what is. I don't want to be misunderstood. I do believe that there is a place and need for belief and morality. My objection is when we conflate belief with truth or reality and treat a belief as if it were reality. This, then, can act as a barrier or stumbling block to human connection. The reality in this story is that a man's son foams at the mouth and throws himself into fires and water. The belief is that the community has decided that the cause is the father's sins or other unwanted behavior. The community has placed a barrier between the father, the Son, and the community. Regardless of intent, any of the answers provided by the community based on their belief only lead to guilt and shame. In this story, we can use 21st century understanding of the human body that the first century writers of the Bible did not have. They refer to the child as having a demon or evil spirit in the original scriptural story. Today, if a child fell to the ground, shaking and foaming at the mouth, we might say it was a seizure or a manifestation of some other neurologic disease. There is no need to think that humans in biblical times were possessed just because it is stated as such. They did not have the language to describe these events, but we can recognize the advances in science and read this new knowledge into the story. I mean, that is what Christianity does best. We have read the Christ into the Old Testament in ways that seem in some cases quite baffling. The Father believes the things that His community says about His Son and the reasons why they are happening. How could He not? He is part of the community and believes that this community has the answers. Sometimes beliefs come close to the truth and some do not. How can we know if a belief we have is not aligned with reality or truth? I would say this is where doubt plays a pivotal role. Without doubt, the earth would still be flat, the sun would still revolve around the earth, we would still be treating maladies of body and mind as possessions of evil spirits, and the list could go on. We are invited to ask the question, why did the Father feel that His Son needed healing? Is it because He believed His Son was possessed? The Father in the story, as written in the Bible, reports that His Son often throws Himself into the fire or water to be destroyed. What about the times He is not doing those things? Is He still considered possessed during those times? Well now, if you can follow this line of thinking, you have begun the process of questioning and will realize that this leads to a doubt as to the cause of the boy's behavior when he is quote-unquote possessed. The next step would be to further evaluate the behavior in relation to changes, perhaps of the internal and the external environment. This may shed light into what triggers the episodes. One may also want to stop referring to the episode as possessions because it only reinforces an idea that has now become clouded in mystery. In this case, the idea of the boy being possessed. For those who have questioned the LDS Church and have developed doubts about the truth claims, they may feel the need to refrain from using terms or phrases that in their mind only serve to reinforce an idea that they now see as unclear or confusing, such as the phrase, "The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is the only true and living church on the earth." So back to the story. Here we have a father who has attempted to have his son healed, but none of the priests could do it. Perhaps they were seeing the son as the one who needed healing. I mean, the child is the one that is having the episodes and behaving in ways outside of the societal norms by throwing himself into a fire. Jesus in this story sees the man and perceives all the baggage that he is carrying that arise from his beliefs and how this may be what is actually interfering with him and his son. Jesus sees this as a relationship issue and not a behavioral issue, so he turns his attention to the father rather than the child. He asks the father, "What do you believe?" And the father gives the typical answer that the community has also given. Jesus tells the father he will bless the child through the father if he can believe. The father replies, "I believe, help my unbelief." This is the point in the story that Jesus grants the father's request. He helps the father to have an increase in unbelief. In the original story, this line in context indicates the man wants his unbelief resolved. In this story, the father still wants his unbelief resolved, but the twist is that Jesus literally interprets the request and blesses him with an increased unbelief. After the blessing, the father was able to shed the beliefs that kept him from seeing his son for what he really was and allowed him to see the truth or reality. His son is a human being that needed no healing, but that deserves love despite any behavior that may be exhibited. The father sees his son with new eyes that could only happen in and through the doubts Jesus blessed him with. The father had reconciled with his son, and the relationship was restored. Perhaps this is how the term restoration could better serve the LDS Church. Rather than saying the restoration is restoring rituals and beliefs of ancient Christianity, We could say that the restoration is the act of restoring relationships with each other, with the earth, with nature, with the universe, and with the divine. What a difference that might make in the lives of the members. Finally able to let go of the transactional, behavior-driven rules and laws and teach that the restoration is one of relationship building. But you might have to doubt a little to be able to do that. If you are in a place where you can do that, great. If not, that is okay too. It is not my place to try and change anyone. I just like telling stories and discussing them. All we can do is try to be the best, whatever we already are. When we can balance our beliefs with our doubts, the dark with the light, the yin and the yang, the cross and the resurrection, we might find our true nature and find, as God said in the beginning, it is good. Thanks again for listening to this episode. I hope the comments were helpful, and I want you to remember that these are just opinions and ideas, and if you have something that is different, that you've taken out of the story, go with it, because that is what makes the story yours. In the next episode, we will take a look at Lehi's dream in the Book of Mormon. Thanks again.